So let's finish out hearing about your 55-year-old lady here. One of the things about her that I think is interesting that we haven't talked about yet is the issue of patients with targetable mutations. You mentioned your other two patients didn't, but this patient looks like they had an EGFR tumor mutation. So what happened with her?
Right. So she was treated with neoadjuvant atezolizumab on a protocol. Then she underwent surgery per protocol. She had N2 involvement and received adjuvant chemotherapy because of that.
Could I just ask, just out of curiosity, how did she do on the atezolizumab neoadjuvantly? Did she respond?
She did well, although she was one of the few that didn't respond.
Did not respond.
So even though, as we said earlier, many patients responded really well, she was one of the people who did not have a good response and therefore was treated with standard chemotherapy and radiation therapy in the adjuvant setting in a sequential fashion. And then the question was, because she had an EGFR mutation, should she go on an adjuvant TKI or not? And that's a controversial question, better posed to our medical oncology colleagues. But as you know, there were trials investigating adjuvant TKI, and they had a progression-free survival benefit, but that did not translate into an overall survival benefit. And so believers do offer it, and non-believers don't offer it.
Your pulmonary oncologist actually, I think, the most proactive, I think, about using adjuvant TKIs in this situation. Most people don't do it outside a trial setting, but it seems like it's not uncommon for your group too.
No, we believe that if you have a genetic driver and you have a drug that works for that driver mutation, that there's a benefit to that. Our institution was one of the first to really move that field forward. So we're believers.
Yeah, well, you know, it's so controversial. It comes up all over oncology. You never know what to do. We just had the SOLO-1 trial looking at a PARP inhibitor of ovarian cancer. Everybody knew it was going to be positive, but nobody did it until they saw the data. But your group's maybe a little bit more proactive. Can you talk a little bit about how you designed her ports and the treatment you gave her in the adjuvant setting after she had surgery?
That was a very standard port field. The right level 4 lymph node was involved, as well as the subcoronal node and several right hilar nodes. So we covered the right level 4, the subcoronal space, and the right hilum with the radiation field.
So this also brings up the issue of what do you do with people with targetable mutations who aren't resectable? And there are a lot of things that have been discussed. One thing maybe we ought to comment on is there were patients with targetable mutations in the Pacific trial. You know, it looked like they benefited as well. I'm kind of curious, was that your take? And are you giving durvalumab to, for example, this patient had had chemo radiation, was not resectable?
So in those patients, we still offer it, although sometimes our medical oncology colleagues will weigh the risks and balances between putting them on durvalumab versus a TKI in the adjuvant setting. It's an unclean science at this point, right? But they'll look at the PD-L1 expression. They'll look at, you know, what comorbidities they have. Do they have contraindications for a TKI or for an immunotherapy? And then they will decide based on those factors.
That's really interesting because, you know, in the rest of the country, they're kind of deciding about their durvalumab or not because, like, TKIs are off the table because most people aren't doing it. But your people kind of choose that they ever do both. Would they give a TKI and during the durvalumab?
I have not observed them do that, no.
Yeah, that seems like it might be a little bit out of bounds there.